we are.
Here we are.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Another evening recording. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's... I guess, you know what? I was going to say we can't get out of bed early like we used to be able to, but it's quite the contrary. I can't sleep. I'm awake at some ridiculous hour.
Well, not we. Me. James can't figure out how to work his recording equipment, so it means we have to re-record stuff in the evening.
I wasn't going to throw you under the bus for that. I really wasn't.
No, you're saving it up to push me under a much bigger bus later, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll find a way. Mm-hmm. I'll find a way.
Yeah.
Well, I have one little piece of housekeeping, not even housekeeping, but just I have to read an email that I received.
Oh God!
Just today.
Oh yeah.
No, this is great. This is great. So this is
totally not the ones that I get then.
No. This is just a listener. This is Alton from the Poverty Ridge Farm and Brewery, who loved our Cans podcast, which is the one that just went out there.
Cans.
So that went live yesterday. So I mean, he sent me this morning, and he was joking with me about the Dewey Decimal System, which came up during it. But the best part is his signature. He signs it, "Cheers, Alton, Poverty Ridge Farm and Brewery. P.S. I consume 60% of the beer we produce, and my wife the other 40.
Nice.
I love it. I love it. Love it. That's what a farm brewery should be. It's really just a home brewery.
It's a way to make sure your grain doesn't go bad. Mm-hmm. You malt it and brew with it. Hey, damn it! If it's good enough for Phoenicians, it's good enough for me.
I love it. I just had to share that. That's real time. That just came this morning into my email.
Cool.
So
well, thank you. I appreciate the shout out.
Yeah, always love hearing from our listeners. You know, please give us things to talk about. I think last week, based on the order of publication, assuming that works properly, you would have heard our mailbag, our list of questions. I don't know if we said it when we recorded last time, but send us more questions. We love questions. And if you don't mind waiting 6 months to get the answer, that's even better.
Oh, yeah, there's that. Me. Was that the bus I was getting pushed in front of? Was that a near miss? That was a near miss.
There is no bus. There is no bus. There is no bus. How long have you known me? That is not my way.
Yeah, Your way is to pay somebody else to do it, so your hands don't get dirty.
I don't know where this is coming from. I don't. P.S. You're the one that screwed up. So why are you throwing all this at me?
Somehow, in anticipation? Somehow this is your fault. Anyway,
I think not. Mm. I think not. All right. So we are going to discuss today the scientific method.
Ooh. Ah. Mm-hmm.
Which I mentioned to my eighth grader earlier and said, hey, we're going to talk about the scientific method. And she said, I remember that, and proceeded to butcher all the steps. So.
Well, she, in her defense, you didn't ask her to tell them to you in order.
I kind of thought the in order was implied.
Well.
I mean, how do you.
That would be part of the science part of the scientific method, or the method part. Actually, it's just the whole scientific method has everything to do with order and logic.
It does. I don't think I could recite the steps to you out of order intentionally. I think that would be more difficult because they're so logically in order.
Painful. It's one of those bad Bond villain tortures. Yes, Mr. Bond, we're going to force you to recite the scientific method out of order.
It's wrong. It's so wrong. Mm-hmm. So for the two listeners that are still there,
yep.
Because, you know, what is the scientific method? The scientific method is a method. Oh, gee, I'm defining it with the words in the title.
Well done.
By the way, I poured the beer. I have not had a single sip yet, and this is what's going on.
Excellent. Right now. Maybe you should start drinking.
I don't know. Maybe we should start over. The scientific method is really a step-by-step way of thinking about I'm not even going to say how to solve a problem, but how to identify a problem and make sure you've identified the correct problem.
Yep, and how to determine whether either your expectations, your assumptions, your educated guess, or dare we say hypothesis, is true or false. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And the key part of the scientific method is staying impartial.
Yes.
Which is, I think, in many cases, the hardest part.
Yep. Staying impartial and even going one step beyond staying impartial, but being skeptical of your assumptions. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. That's hard in anything.
Yep. That's what I'm here for.
The wet blanket of reality.
Let me shit all over your parade, okay?
Yes. Can I change your you know Discord handle to the wet blanket of reality?
The wet blanket of reality. Sure. Mm-hmm. You bet.
Yeah. I think that might be the title of this episode, The Wet Blanket of Reality.
Nice. Yes, but that's a scientific method. So we're going to talk about that today and how does that apply in the hop yard. Mm-hmm. And I think this came up as an offshoot of a discussion we were having about how do growers, they're always coming up with these very grandiose assumptions or statements about why things are happening to them, right? My yield is not where I want it to be or where I think it should be. Therefore, it must be a photoperiod problem. What? That's an awfully big jump to make. So I thought we'd take that example and apply the scientific method to determining how one might go about proving or disproving that statement. But I think it's really an exercise in logical thinking.
It is. It absolutely is. And I believe this all started because I saw an article, a Neil deGrasse Tyson article, where he went through his version of the scientific method, and I sent it over and said, we could talk about this for days.
And at this point, with as many times as we've recorded this episode, we have.
it does feel that way, doesn't it?
So, yeah, let's get into it. So just to a brief synopsis of the scientific method here is basically you got a question or an observation, and then you do a little research around it to sort of get your bearings. And once you do a little bit of research, you pose a question. And that's usually a hypothesis, right? So an educated guess. I hypothesize that, in this case, we're going to talk about yield and day length or photo period. I'm going to hypothesize that because I observe that my yield is not where I want it to be or where I expect it to be. Notice I didn't say that my yield is poor, or my yield is down, or my yields are low. It's not where I want it to be. So we're making an assumption that what I'm observing is already non-optimal for my system, right? Okay, so my yields are not where I want to be. I happen to live at 30 degrees north latitude, which is, you know, further south in the U.S. So there's your observation that my yield is not where I want to be, and I live, you know, further south in the U.S., so that I know my day length is not optimal from everything that I've read and researched. So there's that little bit of research part that I did. Therefore, I need to add supplemental lighting in my hop yard in order to get my yields up. That's your statement. Well, we can turn that into a question. My yields are suboptimal because I believe my day and nighttime periods are not optimal for hop production based on what I've read in the past or heard from other people. Therefore, in order to increase my yields and get them to a place that I deem appropriate, I say I deem appropriate, and I would say based on what, but what I deem appropriate, I have to add lights in my hop yard to tinker with the photo period. Wow, that's a lot. That's a big, big jump. Because then I would say, okay, you've stated your hypothesis. My hypothesis is lights in my hop yard, adjusting the photo period, will improve my yield. Okay, let's figure that out then. Is that what we're going to do? So then you have to say, I've stated my hypothesis. Now I got to look at experimental design. How are you going to test this? So if you go out there, so last year, let's say your yields was, you know, suboptimal and you didn't have lights. But this year, you're going to go out and you're going to put lights in your entire hop yard. And then you notice that, hey, this year I got a way higher yield. Lights must have worked. Compared to what?
Right.
Compared to the year before? Well, yeah. totally, totally out of the scope of the experiment. You have no control in this experiment. So you need two things. You need a treatment and you need a control. A control is a plot that gets no change in its day length and it's just exposed to whatever Mother Nature is going to throw at you. And then you've got a treatment. You got a treatment plot where you're going to expose it to different photoperiod.
So let's expound upon that for just a second, because I'm hearing Kevin say, what are you talking about? I made a change. It got better. The reason for the control is that did nothing else really change? Mm-hmm. Was the weather exactly the same for the season to season? Was your irrigation exactly the same? Was your disease management exactly the same? No. And I think no.
And your plants weren't the same age.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it on a 2-year-old plantation, and now you're in year 3, and all of a sudden, boom, look, I treated my hop yard with this phototherapy, and I have more yield. Or the phototherapy did nothing, and your yield improved because plant age, because, oh, I also changed up my fertilizer, and I didn't think that was a big deal. Or my disease pressure was less this year, and something I didn't really account for. So all those extra variables, it's never just so simple as saying, I can use the previous year's data. You can't. And I see this is one of the biggest errors I see in non-traditional hop growers trying to run experiments on their own site, is that they use previous year's data as a control. And that will screw you every single time. Because you need to have a control from within that same year so that you're controlling for variables you can't control. I need to put a rim shot in there. Yeah. So you're taking into account in your control plot all of the variables from that season, whatever's exposed. And then you've got a plot that's also exposed to all those variables. So it's equal to your control plot. But then you're zapping it with extra light. Or less light, or whatever the hell it is that you're doing. But everything else has to be the same between those two. Everything else. The data that comes out of that, that's part of the data gathering and analysis. So we went from hypothesis to experimental design. Now we're getting data. We're harvesting, or we're taking growth measurements, or, you know, there could be a whole host of data that we're taking. Mm-hmm. We're going to analyze that. We're going to look at those data. And then we're going to come up with some results. Then we're going to analyze the results. Okay, what does this say? Did my yield change? Well, yeah, look, it was over here in control. It was 1.2 pounds per plant. And in the treatment, it's 1.21 pounds per plant. So you got 0.01 pound increase. Yep. Show me the data. Well, what do you mean? How many data points did you take? Well, we took some averages. Or no. Because the error in what plant you measure and when you measure them and how you measure them and all those sorts of things add up and add up and add up so that you get what we call, we test for something called statistical difference. And I think you know a little something about that.
I know a little bit about that, yes.
So when we're analyzing our data, we're saying, yeah, there's a difference here. Let's say there's a difference, but is it statistically significant? Is it actually real? Or is the noise in the system, in how you measured and what you measured and when you measured, is the noise there, the highs and the lows and what we call outliers of just wacky numbers that you don't know where the hell they came from, causing all kinds of confusion in your system? That's a big problem.
It is. And that's why you repeat and you have multiple you repeat and you have multiples. It's mm-hmm. the same thing.
Yeah.
We call those replicates.
Replicates. Let's circle back to experimental design when we've gone through this. Okay, so then we've got to mm-hmm. our results and we're looking at it. Now we can draw a conclusion. So I'll give you a set of parameters here. So if we look back at our hypothesis, the whole goal of this exercise is to prove or disprove our hypothesis. What was our hypothesis? Our hypothesis was that extending or altering day length photo period in our hop yard is going to positively impact our yield, because we believe from some of the research that we've done that our low latitude, 30 degrees, is responsible, and the relative, you know, shortness or no change between day and night That's responsible for our low yield. So we're going to alter the photoperiod. In this case, if we come up and say that between the control plot and the test plot, that you see a 0.01 pound per plant increase, and the standard error in that system is very high, we would say there is no difference.
Yep.
Therefore, we reject our hypothesis, because we can say under these conditions, the photoperiod conditions that we had, whatever they happen to be, because remember, we didn't set up multiple different photoperiods. Let's just say we went with one, because that'll come back to experimental design. So all we could say is, under those photoperiod conditions, whatever it happened to be, day and nighttime lengths, there was no impact. So we reject our hypothesis. So then we have to say, okay, does that mean all photoperiod adjustments do nothing for me, or just that one that I picked?
Just that one in that season on that variety.
Yep. That's it. Do it again. Mm-hmm. Right. Change it. So change it up. So what do you mean change it up? Oh, the season's over. Mm-hmm. So next season, you're going to do it again, because you still believe, right? My hypothesis is that phototherapy is going to improve my yield. But this time, instead of doing one photoperiod, I'm going to do three different ones. So now I've got to have what we call treatments. Three different treatments plus a control. Because again, we have to run this experiment within that same year, so we need a control from that year. So now I have four treatments, a control and three photoperiod treatments. But we're still going to have a problem with our error, right? Our standard error. If we just have, you know, a plot here, like 10 plants under each treatment and 10 plants under control. Well, where those plants are in the field for whatever that treatment is matters, because you'll get impacts from a treatment next door. So now you got to leave space between those treatments so you don't get any influence from them. And then just to make sure that the field, the location in the field, like the soil or the leading edge, or this one gets more water because it's at the end of the row, you have to replicate that treatment. So for each treatment, you're going to run at least three replicates. So now, instead of having just four little plots, now I've got 12, because each treatment needs a replicate.
It grows quickly.
It grows quickly, right? And that's just for a single factor, like photoperiod. Now let's say you're like, well, you know what? I'm pretty sure that fertilizer also is impactful. So now I'm going to do a fertilizer trial too with my photoperiod. Okay. So now each one of those photoperiod plots, let's say you're going to run two different fertilizer levels, or two different fertilizer timings with the same levels. Okay. Each one of those photoperiod plots also needs to be basically multiplied by however many treatments you're going to do for your fertilizer times the replicates. Holy balls, this just got huge.
Yep. Yep. It grows very, very quickly.
And then you got to do that for multiple years, because you have to discount seasonality.
And by the way, during all of this, you're trying to make money on a hop farm.
Oh, yeah.
You're none of these specific changes you're talking about are necessarily going to destroy your yield or screw things up to the point where you're actually losing money off of it. Mm-hmm. But you are tweaking things in places in order to get your experimental design set up and gather the data.
Yep.
In your weatherproof notebook.
In your weatherproof notebook. Yep. With your special markers. I mean, how many times do we hear, Greg, that, well, it's just not, there's no research, or where's all the data, or why isn't this published?
I think the reason it's not is that hop growers are very selfish with their research.
They just don't share. They sit on it all. And because, I mean, all these farms, no matter what their size, have a self-funded research program, right?
They do. And it's not like other crops where they share. Right. We're a very selfish industry.
Yeah, that's exactly it. No, it has more to do with the fact that these big growers, or the veteran growers, have learned to optimize their system from multiple generations of experience. They've observed and they've tried things, and that didn't work. They tried it again, and that didn't work. And, oh, granddad tried this, I'm going to try it again. Lo and behold, 50 years later, it still don't work. Guess what? It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Stop trying it. And that's what advantage they have. But those of us that are non-traditional small-scale growers, we don't have that. So we have to be very, very deliberate about making up ground in that whole knowledge gain space by being very purposeful about how we design our experiments and how we run them. It's expensive. It takes loads of time. And you got to have the right knowledge set in order to analyze this stuff. Mm-hmm. It is not simple.
Or you can just say, hey, it was photo period, and just go ahead and
change
everything.
Yeah, you know what? Everybody wants an easy button. I'm going to go ahead and change this. Or I read this, I saw this university, and they ran one study on whatever it happens to be. I don't know. I don't care what it is.
Five plants next to the quad.
Yeah. A bunch of undergraduates are doing the research project for them, right? And because they care a lot about data analysis. We have to be careful and ask ourselves when we're looking at these data from published sources to say, was this replicated anywhere else? Over how many seasons did it happen? So that we can grow our confidence that the data that we're seeing is real and not a fluke of some sort of, or an artifact of the experimental design.
Yep. And I'd say there's another side to that too. There's the, is it the way you just described, was it a quality experiment? But there's also the, is it relevant to my operation? They could have done a great experiment in a different area of the country that has, with a completely different soil type.
Or they could have done it, they could have set their experiment out at a different time of the year. You know, let's getting away from photo period. Maybe they're looking at fertilizer applications. Okay, when did they start it? Well, hell, they're in Tennessee, so they could start it in March. But our friends in upstate New York have still got 6-8 feet of snow at that point, right? So that's not relevant to me. Same thing happens with, you know, cutback timing. You know, when is the optimal cutback time? For you, I don't know. Do the research on your farm, but don't do it for one season and figure out that's the way it's going to work, because whatever you realized out of that season's observations and treatments work for that season. How do you take that information and distill it down to its essence and learn from it so that you can apply similar learnings under new environmental conditions? That takes experience. I don't know what else to tell you.
Experience, which also equals just repetition.
Yep. Year over year over year. People would say, well, James, how did you know when is the optimal time to cut your yard back? Well, because I've been doing it on that same damn yard for 15 years.
Yeah. And I would make the argument we didn't know the optimal time, but every year we got a little closer due to the past data.
Oh, yeah. And then the number of times I hit it on the head versus the number of times I totally hosed it up. Mm-hmm. Ouch. But those are the lumps you take. Now think, let's say over 10 or 15 years, I'm taking a lot of lumps. But let's say that farm and the knowledge that family of farms has generationally, you know, you're at 50, 60, 70 years. And I think Dan Carey said it, you know, best. He summed it up when we talked to him, had him on the show. He's like, you get one shot at it. A farmer, a hop farmer, a successful long-term hop farmer has maybe 50 chances at this.
Oh, I thought he said 30, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, is it 30? Yeah. Yeah, it could be 30, 50, whatever. But
you give up or die, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Old farmers never die. They just compost.
Yeah, and he was comparing it to brewing where, bad batch, try something different. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, you think about it at that scale of difference. So that was a fantastic conversation because he was talking about that with the respect he has for hop farming, in that there is, you do only have a limited number of chances. And so you better make those chances count.
In the context of this discussion, where we're talking about purpose or question, right? Hypothesis, forming a statement that you're going to address, that you're going to prove or disprove. You're going to design your experiment. You're going to run your experiment. You're going to crunch the data, and you're going to come to a conclusion. That's what you're going to do.
Yep. And that conclusion might be, I need to run some more tests. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yep. I mean, we spent 8 years running tests before we published our first paper on low temperature hop drying. Because how many shots a year do we get at it? One. And if we were on our game, we could maybe do 3 different experiments to nail that down. And then it was done. And then we'd be like, What did we do wrong? What do we got to do better next year? How are we going to address these things? And hopefully gather enough information to get to the point where we could design a robust experiment that could be replicated by others, which it has, by the way, and prove or disprove our hypothesis. And in this case, our hypothesis was proven. So then you say, this is what I found. Somebody else try this and see if it's true. Because in my scenario, my system, it's true. But in your system, it may not be because I don't know anything about your system.
Yep.
So try it. Because if the scientific principle is sound, someone should be able to replicate the experiment and obtain similar results.
And that secondary validation is huge because you don't know if you've got bias built into your system sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to think that you don't, but having that validation, having secondary, tertiary validation is huge.
That's the scientific method in a nutshell as it applies to a very complex problem question that we always get, which is the photo period is not optimal for my system. That's why my yield sucks. Or is it because you just haven't looked at some of these other inconvenient truths about your operation where you could make small incremental changes and have a much larger yield impact? That's my hypothesis.
You know, something that we mentioned last time, and I just want to bring it up, is the importance of the question, is getting the question right.
Mm.
That you mentioned the hypothesis and the statistical validity, and I know I've mentioned this before. My all-time favorite quote ever is from the father of the hypothesis test, John Tukey, the famous statistician. And yes, there are famous statisticians if you live in those circles like I do.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
He is.
Well, so
he
isn't that like in Des Moines or something? I don't know.
I'm the statistician Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
it's probably just in my dreams.
Ah, really? Could be.
You know. So John, as I call him, we're on a first name basis.
John. Yeah.
You know, John once said, "I'd rather have an approximate answer to the right question than an exact answer to the wrong one." Ask the right question. Make sure you're asking the right thing, because if you start this scientific method incorrectly, forget it.
Yep.
You know.
You said approximate. Was it the approximate answer to the right question?
Yes.
That'd get you in the ballpark. That moves you incrementally forward, opposed to getting an exact right answer to a poorly framed question. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've heard me say multiple times, God love them, our hypnologists hear me say it all the time, where somebody will find a journal article, they'll find a paper that was published or a white paper that wasn't peer-reviewed, or they'll find on social media or some other interwebs where so-and-so said this and this was their experiment. And I dig around, I find the actual journal article that it was based on, and I'm reading the experimental design. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Do you know how many people now are living by this just because it was published, but you go back to the actual experimental design and it's horse shit? Mm-hmm. It drives me nuts. Right. And then I've got to be Captain Bringdown, which I usually love to be Captain Bringdown. But in these scenarios, it just grinds my gears because it doesn't help anybody.
Right. And to your point earlier, there is such a lack of real scientific studies in hop production that when there is one, you want to cling to it and say, yes, someone did a study. But you're right. When you dig into it and see the study was crap, then.
So it'd be an example of a really good study that came out, which is the one we've talked about, is about photoperiod, and the one that came out from Colorado in the greenhouse, and dormancy, whether you need cold dormancy or you can do phototherapy dormancy. And what they found in their experiment, and they ran it two or three times, is that they could. And I look through the data, you look through the experimental design, you're like, wow, this is a really well-designed experiment. And the statistics are sound. And so in that scenario, for that greenhouse and that group of researchers, this hypothesis said, yes, you don't need cold to influence dormancy to get regrowth and flowering and vegetative regrowth. But I have yet to see that study repeated elsewhere. Hmm. That doesn't mean it's not valid. But to take that study and go run off and base a whole new business around it, which I've seen happen and subsequently fail, all in the span of since that paper came out, is bad news. But yeah. But that's the boring part of this whole science chatter is saying, yeah, this is sensational. It made a big splash, and it even got picked up in non-scientific, horticulture circles. But it's not good enough. It's not enough to base your entire operation on. It's a great indicator. It's absolutely great indicator. But until more work is done on it, it's not something to base your entire operation around. Don't do it.
No, you've got to solve it for yourself. And, we've talked before about your own yard, and everything's different. Nothing anyone does is going to replicate exactly what happens by mm-hmm. you.
Nope.
So you've got to take these things as directional.
So let's play another game here with the scientific method. Ooh. Dig through our past statements that growers have made. Anything that's on the top of your mind, throw one out to me, and we'll design an experiment around it right now using the scientific method to prove or disprove the hypothesis.
What, you're talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were asking asking the listeners to send something in. Why? I'm thinking we're going to do this again?
No, the listeners, okay. There's nobody listening. This is just you and me.
It's just us?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Oh shit, you know what? My recorder's not working. We got to do this again.
Nice.
Nah, I'm fucking with you. Uh-huh, okay.
Uh-huh. Nice.
I made that too easy.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. I'll try harder next time. So, I'm sorry, what was the question? You want me to give you just some other thing other than photoperiod?
Something that we hear from growers about, something in their field. They're going to make some brazen statement about this is the way it's got to be. And I'll be like, all right, well, let's prove or disprove that. And we'll design an experiment using the scientific method to prove or disprove the hypothesis. And if you can't come up with one, I've got a few.
I'm blanking on anything really good, to be perfectly honest. What have you got?
How about spring pruning?
Oh, sure.
Constantly hear spring pruning. When do I cut back? When do I cut back? When do I cut back? Well, I cut back last year and it didn't do anything for me. So this year I'm not going to cut back. Let's take a look at that. What do we need to consider in that statement using the scientific method? Well, first thing I would say is, what's your question? Right? What your question? What's your observation? Why I should cut back? I shouldn't cut back? Am I supposed to cut back? So I'm going to do a little research. And what I find is that everybody says something different. Okay, so now I have to determine for myself what I need to do. So do I need to cut back or not? Well, what is cutting back going to do for you? How are you going to measure the impact of the benefit of cutting back if there is a benefit or not?
Well, really, you do it for yield.
Okay, so we're going to do it for yield. So we're going to use yield as our metric of whether cutting back in the spring or not has an impact in my operation. Okay, that seems reasonable. So when are you going to cut back? Well, obviously before you train. Okay, so I'm going to cut back, but when do I start? So am I just going to cut back once? If I'm going to cut back once, then I have to pick a date. I have to draw a line in the sand. Well, I'm going to cut back 2 weeks before I train. Well, when are you going to train? Well, I don't know. Now we have a conundrum. We know what we want to do. We know how we're going to measure the impact, but we don't know when we're going to do it. Okay, so what do? You go with what you know. Well, last year I trained the last week of May. Okay. So then I'm going to cut back the first week of May. Okay. But last year was an abnormally warm spring, or maybe it was abnormally cold. And this year it's different. Oh, shit. Well, I guess date doesn't help me much then.
No.
So now I got to look at what can I go by? Well, I can go by plant growth stage, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to cut back when my plants reach, when the first binds reach 18 inches. Okay, now we're on the right track, because now that's something you can measure is irrespective of what happened the year before, right? It's confined within this season. So I'm going to cut back when my plants are at 18 inches, all right? How long does it usually take your plants to go from 18 inches to training in a, quote, normal year? So that's a date that you're going to mark down. Then you're going to say, you're going to watch to that date, because you're going to draw a line in the sand. You're going to say, 18 inches. I'm going to burn them down. I'm going to cut them down. I'm going to do whatever. Then you're going to track how long it takes for them to grow back. and compare that to what your, quote, normal is to know whether you're tracking in the right range or not. Then you're going to train, but you're only going to do this on half of your yard or in half of your variety or in a small patch of one variety and have the other rest of it for your control where you don't cut it back. And you train on this at the same time. You don't train one earlier than the other one. You got to keep it all steady state. Unless you're going to say, well, now I got to change training because the ones I don't cut back are going to be bigger and they're going to self-train. Ooh, now you have another variable to control for. So what are you going to do? Are you going to go back and purposely untrain and only train binds of the same length as they are in the burn back or cut back versus the uncut back? Oh, snap. Now what do I need? How am I going to control for that? You see how just
explodes
very, yeah, very shortly when you start looking at trying to control for all these crazy influences that you might expect just between two treatments. It gets out of control. And then to say, I'm going to replicate this experiment over multiple years in multiple locations and then try to correlate all these data together to say, this is what you should do when. It's nearly impossible.
Yeah, so much to look at there. And yet if you don't, you're just guessing.
Right. So you do it as simply as you can. And the way that you overcome all the variables that could creep in from a single season where you're trying to do an intensive study is you do a much simpler study for several seasons. More and more and more. So that, yeah, guess what? In 10 years, you got it pretty well down. Because you've seen most of the strange variables that Mother Nature's going to throw at you. She's going to give you all the permutations, and you're going to see what the data looks like, and you're going to get an idea. You're going to say, you know what? Under those conditions, under that spring and the summertime temperatures, and when I cut back, I've crushed it for yield. And so then you're going to look at those parameters, you know, those variables underneath that good year, and then you're going to compare your progress every subsequent year to that. And adjust what you can in order to make up ground compared to the season that actually worked. And that just takes skill.
Yep.
So you're never going to find a study designed that's going to tell you, do I need to cut back and when do I need to do it? You just can't. You got to figure it out for yourself.
Yeah. It's all so localized. And so, and it's not even just local. We talk about soil and we talk about your farm. It's so much of it is about you and how you do things.
Mm-hmm. The horticulture is absolutely critical in this game. You can't take that for granted.
I don't know where this is coming from.